My Music. A panel game devised by Tony Schrein and Edward J. Mason. Chairman, Steve Race.
Thank you. Remember our gang in the old silent films? Well, this is my gang. Far from silent, John Amos and Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. While here beside me in the dangerous role of scorekeeper and a lotter of marks, the Pearl White of the 1980s, Mary Bell. She says, who's Pearl White? Never mind. John, some opening music by J.S. Bach, but played by a lady from New Zealand. Lady from New Zealand, I said. Who would that be?
Yes, I think I know who it is. And she was once paid a rather nice backhanded compliment by Simon Preston, another organist who was organist at the Westminster Abbey. Somebody said to him the other day, who's the best organist in this country? And he said, I suppose it's Gillian Weir. I simply don't get time to practice these days.
Oh, dear. He's much more modest than that, though.
He did say it.
Yeah, well, there you are. Gillian didn't know you were going to say it on the radio, did he?
No, they're both marvellous organists. Right. So.
Yes, Gillian Weir was the organist in that Passacaglia by Bach. Yes. Frank, Parry's Blessed Pair of Sirens was for a while banned from performance at St. Paul's Cathedral. After a reminder of a few bars, tell us why.
I would have thought because he'd knocked off the opening bars from Handel's Julius Maccabeus.
I will accept that.
Now, what happened was that as soon as they brought the sirens in, people put their tin hats on and rushed out of the abbey. And chaos was caused. It was a frightful scene.
I will give you the mark, and I'll tell you, I think this is extraordinary. The Dean and Chapter of St. Paul's banned Blessed Pair of Sirens because they objected to the implications of the word sirens. It's Milton, of course, and nobody cares about that. Ian, your turn. Where have you heard this tune before?
Well, there are actually two answers to that question, as far as I'm concerned. And the one answer would be in the living room of the late Mrs. Bradbury's house in Ringmer in Sussex.
That's not the answer I had in mind.
The reason I say that is that I used to be a lodger in her house when I was working at Glyndebourne, and she had in the corner of this living room a polyphon.
That's what it was, yes.
And she had that particular disc, and this was a sort of jukebox of the period, and you chose from these huge metal discs. They had the titles on, just like gramophone records, and you clipped it in with a lot of marvellous sort of noises, spring-like, sort of boing, ding, ding, as you were putting it in. And then you started it, and then there were quite a lot of clicks, and then this beautiful sound, this mellow sound, came out, and with a great repertoire, including that waltz from Gounod's Faust.
Correct, the waltz from Faust.
No, they answer. We want to know what it was.
Oh, I thought you said where
I heard it, meaning in the opera.
No, I did say where have you heard this tune before, and I got the answer too.
You did,
That's right. Yes, Waltz from Faust. Dennis, your question: who was involved in this bestseller? For
that, I think.
That brings back the 60s. That was a good song, that was...
Good song.
I thought so, yeah.
A good song, yes.
Alan
and the performance
Price.
Was
didn't
by...
Alan Price write it, yeah.
Well, he was in the group.
Yeah.
He didn't write it.
Was,
it. No, it's
The Animals.
No, he didn't write it. It's a traditional old New Orleans song.
Yeah, I meant he arranged it.
Yes.
Because I had a long time ago, had a record of Josh White singing that. Yeah.
That's right. Who was the singer there?
That was Eric Burdon.
Eric Burdon in 1964. Paul Gambaccini wrote in the Radio Times, and I copied it down, he wrote, "Listening to Burdon howl House of the Rising Sun, it's hard to believe the sound comes from a human being and a Newcastle boy at that." Which I thought was true. A cylindrical tube overblown at the 12th. In other words, John, the... Oh, I have to tell you, it's the clarinet.
You would. Good.
Pardon?
You mean a clarinet in A, not a clarinet in B?
No, any clarinet. The clarinet is over... No, the flute is overblown at the octave, the clarinet's overblown at the 12th.
Good, yes. Thanks.
Right. John, in 1919, the great conductor Ernest Ansemet wrote about an extraordinary clarinet virtuoso, this artist of genius. He was that vibrato,
the good man.
No, not a good man. No, well, a good man in his way, yes, but much earlier than that. I have to tell you, it was Sidney Bechet.
Good.
That Ansemet was talking about in those glowing words.
You know when Ansemet first came to England?
Now you're home and dry, aren't you?
No, no. Yes. Yeah.
He was overblown at the 12th when he played golf with a leading conductor.
Yeah. He only spoke in the past tense. He didn't seem to have managed the present tense. And when the cellist kept on asking silly questions, he finally said to him, don't spoke. If you didn't like it, you went.
That was also there, yes. That's right. Yes. Lovely. So anyway, if we can finally get through it, the subject of this round is clarinet players. Frank, this Welsh clarinetist enjoyed a regular BBC job in the 1940s. Remember his name?
I was hoping it would be Nat Temple, but he wasn't Welsh.
No, he's not Welsh.
Sid Phillips.
No, he's not Welsh either for the same reason.
Welsh,
no, both of them are.
Yes, I should think it's Harry Parry.
Yes, yeah. Harry Parry, who was, of course, the leader of the BBC Radio Rhythm Club Sextet. And this, Ian, was the man he wanted so much to sound like. Name.
Well, I think luck is on my side here, because that's about the only one that I really think I could identify with any confidence, and it's Benny Goodman.
Yes, it's Benny Goodman. Do you like Benny Goodman?
Yes, yeah. I do.
Yes, I do. Well, I'll soon
indeed
cure that with a little of his singing. Listen.
Now you take the high road, and I'll take the low road.
But I'll be in Scotland before you.
Yeah, but you should hear me play the clarinet. Yeah.
Well said. Dennis Goodman, the most able, surely, of jazz clarinetists, but perhaps the most poetic, was...
Name. 50 calories just listening to that.
Yes.
Well, I just by process of elimination, because I can't tell a poetic clarinet player from another, I would think it's Artie Shaw being the one.
Artie Shaw from his
left.
The opening of his concerto for a clarinet. Can we just have a quick dash through his wives or something?
Do, yeah.
Any nominations?
Ava Gardner.
Yes. I'll tell you them in order. Jane Carnes, Margaret Allen, Lana Turner, Betty Kern, that's Jerome Kern's daughter, Ava Gardner, Catherine Windsor, Doris Dowling and Evelyn Keyes. Who says it isn't a man's world?
Elizabeth Taylor says it.
Was he overblown at the 12th?
I don't know why you're not letting me forget that. Because you'll forget it the moment we finish. Never mind. One of the most loved tunes in the world is not the main theme of the piece. And so on. That's the accompaniment. Or at any rate, the counter melody. The theme is this. John, with that in mind, Philip Lane, the composer, has written to me from Cheltenham to point out the rather curious fact that this infinitely famous tune is quite difficult to recognise without its accompaniment. See how quickly you can name it. Interrupt me as I play, John. Here's the tune.
I don't think I do.
I play you a bar of the accompaniment.
Oh, yes.
And so it becomes...
On the other hand, if you take the rhythm out...
Moonlight Sonata. Frank, very different. Here's the middle tune of something in the syncopated line. So on.
What is it?
Any idea what it is?
It's a rag.
It's a rag.
Temptation.
You're right. It's the middle bit of Temptation Rag, yes. Ian, on an... you may well applaud that. Very good. You may well applaud that. Ian, on an earlier programme, I mentioned the hooter on my diesel train into Buckinghamshire, which used to sound a major third. But on a recent journey, I noticed it had spread itself to an augmented fourth. Now, I can only think of one tune the driver might play. What is it? Yes, that's it. What's it called?
It's the Jumping Bean.
Robert Farnan's Jumping Bean, that's right. We are doing well in this round, aren't we? Dennis, what's this old novelty tune called?
You've only got to say we are doing well at one time, and the whole thing grinds to halt. It's got a name like the ghost or the jumping ghost.
Yes, try a synonym for ghost.
Oh, we
starts with
have
S.
We the time?
What? S-P.
Spook. Spooky something.
Yes.
Spooky Ookums.
Yeah. Spooky, no, half a mark, I think. Spooky Takes a Holiday by Larry Clinton.
I hope if the driver of your train hears this programme, he doesn't try and play the Jumping Bean as it's going along on his feet. Yes.
What, of course, he and the driver of any other train can play is the one-note samba. If he wants to, he can play... Wouldn't it be nice to hear a few stanzas of Peggy Lee? While you four figure out in each case, who wrote the words? John, in your case, words and music were by the same person.
While tearing off a game of golf, I may make a play for the caddy. But when I do, I don't follow through, 'cause my heart belongs to Daddy.
The words, John, by...
The same bloke who wrote the music.
That's right. Give the boy a mark, yes. Do you happen to recognise that sophisticated style?
My heart belongs...
To Daddy.
Well, you said it was the sophisticated style. You mean Peggy Lee. You said it was her.
No, I mean the songwriter.
Oh, it's Cole Porter.
Thank you. Yes.
Nobody else would rhyme caddy with daddy.
That's right. Frank, here's yours.
I didn't know what time it was then I met you. Oh, what a lovely time it was, how sublime it was, too. I didn't know what day it was, you held my hand warm like the month of May it was, and I'll say it was grand.
words.
Marvellous.
Yes. Yes, isn't she true?
Rodgers words, and Hart.
Yes, so words by Hart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ian, you've sung this yourself. I wonder if you've noticed, though, the name of the lyric writer.
Someday we'll build a home on a hilltop high. You and I, shiny and new, a cottage that two can fill. And we'll be pleased to be called the folks who live.
Oh, that lovely performance. She's gorgeous. The lyric by
the melody is by Jerome Kern, and I think the lyric is by Hammerstein.
Yeah,
Oscar Hammerstein.
Oscar Hammerstein. Yes, that interesting song commentator Alec Wilder described the words of that song as somewhat Guestian homespun. What did he mean? Can Dennis help?
Well,
Guestian.
Edgar Guest is an American poet who was always taken as a symbol of a kind of second rate, though he wasn't bad.
An English-born American folksy poet, yes. Your question, Dennis, who wrote the lyric for this?
The days of wine and roses laugh and run away. Child at play.
Well, specifically for that was Sammy Kahn, but
yes.
I mean, it was what they call in ice hockey circles with an assist from Ernest Dowson, and They Are Not Long the Days of Wine and Roses.
Sammy Kahn's song lyric, that's right, Henry Mancini's music.
Very Sammy Kahn, isn't it?
Yes, very it is, that's right. My accountant. He's not here tonight. I think he's away on his yacht. My accountant would like to know if you can think of a suitable signature tune or theme song for someone of his profession or calling, job. A song for an accountant. That's up for grabs. Anybody want to have a go?
Well, I can think of... Go on.
No, I was going to say, I've got a friend called Tom, and he came to see me this afternoon, and he said, you get lots of anecdotes about doctors and singers and actors, but not about chartered accountants. And he said, I heard one. Would you like to hear it? And I said, yes. And he said, there's a senior partner in this accountant firm took all the juniors to Gilbert and Sullivan. They saw patients. And afterwards, he said to one of the junior accountants, did you enjoy it? And he said, oh, yes, sir, very spirited. The whole thing was most interesting. He said, the only thing that worried me was in the opening chorus, 20 lovelorn maids are we, there were only 19.
Yes.
And I think a song for accountants might be Figure Woe.
I thought of a lucrative job, which is an operetta title, would be very nice for a firm to do the accounts of Luxembourg.
Yes. That figures. Yes. Ian.
Look, somebody once rang me up and said, could you recommend a good accountant? And I said, yes, I could actually. He said, you see, what I want, he said, is somebody who'll be a bolster between me and the Inland Revenue. So I said, well, I have got just that. He said, what do you mean? Well, I said, my accountant is called Jack Bolster. Which he is.
He struck off the mention on the radio. Never mind.
Pillow of the profession.
Song title. This rather defeats me. The only thing I can think of is I'll be seeing you in all the old financial places.
Dennis, an accountant.
Well, I was thinking of another Peggy Lee song, actually, which is my one that my accountant says every time he sees my bank balance, was, is this all there is?
And you have to sign to say so, too, don't you? Yes. Let me say it again. My four colleagues choose their own songs for these final minutes. If the choice were mine, Frank would not be doing a notoriously wide-ranging, difficult song called Deep Purple.
I'm not afraid.
And perhaps...
And perhaps, I'm insured.
Perhaps John might not be singing a jazz number. Anyway, it'll be fun. And starting, Frank, on a low D is something I've long wanted to do. So, Frank, you're...
Incidentally, I'm a bit worried about the chap who sings this song, because the actual last line, you know, they think, Doctor, I have these deep purple dreams.
Yes. Your note, Frank, here it is.
I'll start and you follow. When the deep purple falls over sleepy garden walls and the stars begin to flicker in the sky, through the mist of a memory you wander back to me, breathing my name with a sigh. In the still of the night, once again I hold you tight. Though you're gone, your love lives on when moonlight beams. And as long as my heart may beat, lover, we'll always meet here in my deep purple dreams.
Oh, chicken.
Yeah. He could have done it, saving himself. Yes.
A man can do himself an injury attempting that.
And so to John. John, why have you chosen this jazzy Gershwin number?
Well, when I was in New York last May, I saw that Gershwin show with Twiggy in it, the adorable Twiggy, who's learnt to sing, rather like Dennis. No. Well, I will rephrase that.
That's a rotten thing to say about anybody.
I'll rephrase that.
With her,
like
with
Dennis,
her it's taken.
She has
learned
to sing.
That's better, right.
To show affection in your direction, you know I'm fit and able. I more than merely love you sincerely, my kind. There must be lots of other men you hypnotize. All of a sudden I've begun to realize that's foremost my one and only. What am I gonna do if you turn me down when I'm so crazy over you? I'd be so lonely. Where am I gonna go if you turn me down? Why darken all my skies of blue? I tell you, I'm not asking any miracle. It can't be done, it can't be done. I know a touching man who will grow lyrical and make us one, and make us one. So, my one and only, there isn't a reason why you should turn me down when I'm so crazy over you.
First glance, I thought Dennis's song was by Weber, but it turns out to be somebody called Weber. It's really the only completely genuine love song that's ever been written.
I love me, I'm wild about myself. I love me, my photo's on my shelf. You may not think I look so good, but I think I look fine. It's grand when I look in my eyes and know that I'm all mine. Oh, I love me, I'm wild about sweet me. I love me, only me, we live so happily. I like myself with such delight, I take me straight home every night and sleep with me till broad daylight. I'm riled about myself.
Where you've got wave. Actually, the words of that written by a brilliant Australian comedian called Will Mahoney.
Oh, yeah. Didn't he dance on a xylophone?
He danced on a xylophone, indeed.
Right. He did that too, yes.
I think I'm going to retire from this contest this week.
No. I love an ingenious rhyme, and so does Vivian Ellis. He wrote, do you remember in this song, Ian, "Don't you agree, sir, Mona Lisa, and sunset hour and one set hour." Lovely song, Ian.
She's my lovely, my Venus, and don't you agree, sir? She's my lovely, serene as any Mona Lisa. She's the sunset hour when nothing looks grey. She's the one set hour I long for each day. For she's my lovely, the hush that brings the pearly dawning. She's my lovely, the thrush that sings at early morning. And the loveliest thing about her, you see, is she's so lovely to me.
Warm note to end on. Just for the record, the quiz part of our show resulted this week in a tie. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amos, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race, and the program was produced by Pete Atkins.